Again, this is Hard Knock Radio. My name is Mike Biggs. They're at the controls. Kicking off the show, Davey D speaks with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. at his recent Santa Cruz stop on his speaking tour entitled You Can Kill a Revolutionary, but You Cannot Kill a Revolution. Today, December 4th, marks the 40th year of Fred Hampton Sr.'s assassination. This is Hard Knock Radio. Keep it locked right here.
The first question I want to start off with is the title of your tour. You can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. What exactly does that mean? You know, is that a cute rhyme, a nice slogan to put on the back of a t-shirt, or is it something that has real significant meaning that we really need to understand its full depth?
This tour, you can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill a revolution. It was one of the most profound statements articulated by Chairman Fred, who was the deputy chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. It was a statement that, like a war cry to the ruling class as well as to the community, that regardless of how many guns and badges, regardless about the state taking our freedom fighters and making them political prisoners, regardless who, how many of our people they may force, and they have forced into political exile, and regardless of how many of us they would send to what we refer to as a revolutionary happy hunting ground, in other words, assassinate. To be very clear, the beat goes on. And this is extremely important because we, as a revolutionary, we must understand that when you talk about fighting for peace, as the Chairman Fred also said, that we must understand that there's a price to pay for peace. And in the event that situation comes about, that we are assassinated, that the people be very clear that they must fall in love with the plan as opposed to just man. That again, they must pick up and continue to work. So again, we, POCC, which is defined as the ideological cubs of the Black Panther Party, we say the Panther Party was a tough act to follow, but we try our best. So we say we try to put into practice that statement that you can kill a revolution, but you can't kill a revolution.
This is the 40th commemoration coming up on December 4th of your father's death. He was assassinated at a very young age, and you are older in the flesh than he was when he was taken from us. If he was sitting right here, what sort of powwow would you two have in terms of strategy on which direction we would go? And what I'm particularly interested in is that you have the benefit of history to know the direction that he wanted to go. I'm sure your mom explained, and you know, comrades of his have shared with you, and you have a deep understanding, but you've also lived a pretty long time and have your own experiences now. Went to places that he's probably never gone to, the Brazils and El Salvador and what have you. So if it was just the two of y'all now able to plot out for the next 3 to 5 years as to what direction y'all want to take this in, what sort of strategies do you think you would conclude? Where would you find flaws in your dad's philosophy? What would you be building on, and what are some of the pitfalls that you might have made that you would share with him?
Even to this day, sometimes people laugh, they trip, they say, one of my monikers and names they like, I'm referred to at times as Lush Chairman or Young Chairman Fred Hampton. As you pointed out, I'm coming up on 40 years old, and Chairman Fred was assassinated when he was 21 years old. This was a force who we see was way ahead of his time, a force who the FBI placed a tap on his telephone. He was 14 years old when he had seen his organizing capabilities when he took the junior NAACP from 300 members. And when I speak about him, it's continuous, it's an ongoing, I guess, humbleness that I understand the war, and that we do define this as a continued war on our people, that we need to be attempting to exceed or tweak our tactics to further advance past what our predecessors, past what those who came before us, what they did. But I say in all humbleness, I still to this day learn lessons from this legend. Like we say, there's nothing new under the sun. In other words, I mean, the core of the system is still the same. They may tweak their tactics. They may, as opposed to colonialism, you may be faced with neo-colonialism. They may change the names, so on and so forth. But the root cause of his ideas, what he stood for, I mean, even how he addressed the race question as well as the class question, and it's still the positions, the summations are still relevant. On the way here, we listened to some audio of Malcolm speaking, and we were just tripping. Brother was commenting, like, man, this is relevant for right now today. So, you know, especially in Chicago, it's this old saying that only the names have changed in general, but Chicago, the names haven't even changed. So, I mean, not to be vague with the answer, I really can't, I mean, man, if I could be fortunate to be in the presence of Chairman Fred himself right now, I still would be humbled and honored, you know what I'm saying, just how he would assess certain things, but I would also feel, and I'm not saying this seems some sort of macabre type of way also, I recall when they asked Malcolm, how do you view yourself as an old man, and Malcolm said, I don't even see myself as an old man, and we do, and Chairman Fred himself stated that, you know, he understood that there's a price to pay for peace, and he was willing to pay that price. A lot of times, even to this, when I'm organizing, I'm shocked. I was coming yesterday to some comrades. I'm shocked and I'm still here. I mean, sometimes I think I'm riding on fumes. I'm too much. And I was saying to one of my comrades, there's certain struggles I don't even engage in anymore because I consider myself to be old for revolutionary. You know? And that's way out of here. But just, I mean, because with me in this occupation, you know what I'm saying? The monetary pay is short and you don't live long. But just go back to the core of your question, man. Whatever Chairman Fred say, it is what it is.
Well, let me be a little bit more specific about it, just my thoughts on it. You know, oftentimes we talk about people who have passed, and it's good to acknowledge them and all that, and it's important to learn the lessons. But one, you know, I think most of us in this room, definitely me, I want to see you be an old man, you know, and an old man who is an elder statesman, an elder who is able to be a source of wisdom and a resource for people who are continuing to struggle. And even if you're not able to be on the front line physically, your mental is still sharp and you're able to provide that wisdom for people who are on the front line. And I think in our respective communities, what we have found is that elders have been removed from our midst oftentimes, and we reinvent the wheel. So one of the things that I'm thinking to myself is that a lot of people don't really understand what Chairman Fred's full vision would have been. And maybe if we understood some of his goals, if they were able to be carried out, how would that look? You know, so let me give you some examples. He was working with the gangs. If there wasn't COINTELPRO and he was still around, what was the ultimate goal for him working with the Blackstone Rangers and everybody else? What was the ultimate goal? How would they have been interconnected with the Panther Party? How would a Chicago look politically? Would there be a Mayor Daley or his son as the mayor? Would there even be a Barack Obama? Or would a Barack Obama have to have a whole different politic if the goals of your father were to have come to fruition over the past 40 years, from how you understand where he was coming from and from the work that you've been doing? So maybe you could think of it from those terms. So that, and I want us to all see this so that we can go, wow, you know, this is a goal that we could really shoot for if there were some tangible goals that you knew that he was gunning for.
We utilize the tool, the philosophical tool of dialectical materialism, which we understand that things are constantly being born and growing as well as they're dying and disintegrating. We even consider the work the assassinations of such forces as Chairman Fred, Defense of Demar Clark, and actually the military defeat of the Black Panther Party, the Black Power Movement. We say military defeat, but we also stress ideologically they won. In other words, you can go to the street corners of Detroit, Chicago, and talk about the Black Panther Party, you can still see that glow that comes back alive in the people. It's still ideological love and respect and reverence for that organization. However, we also acknowledge the work and the damage control that we have done get to a certain point, like even the legacies of the work that they did, we don't take it for granted that information, what they did, has been laid out properly. There's been a continuous attempt to hijack or water down the contributions that these forces did. And it's a lot of time that we have to invest in that. I mean, Reverend Nat Turner, it's a long time to get people to be very clear that he was not just some crazy madman, that he's a revolutionary. It took a long time to get people to understand Abraham Lincoln's true intentions. You know, he wasn't just some love or identification with the black people. There was a strategic move he did, you know, with the Emancipation Proclamation. There are so much misconceptions and lies that have been put forward and continuously put forward about such organizations as the Black Panther Party. We've had to do a lot of work and continuously find a lot of counterfeit organizations, a lot of people who attempted to hijack or water down the legacy of this organization. And that was the stuff that we've done, that people, a lot of things that they even get to take it to this point, that the POCC is defined as the ideological cause of Black Panther Party. This was not just granted. I let people know I'm from Chicago. This is in some sort of Egyptian dynasty where that's Chairman Freya's son, his son carried on the legacy. I've been put to the test, and I've continuously been put to the test. A lot of people say, let me see if he's just talking this stuff, you know, the movie Panther is out. They seen me take a personal position. They seen my mother, who, with gas bills not being paid, the house freezing, people try to offer movie deals to hijack or just let this go in about this movie, you know, to water down the legacy. She refused that. They've seen us have to take a principal position to expose people like now U.S. Congressman Bobby Rush, who was a former deputy minister of the Pencil Party. We had to go against the grain, against a lot of people, to who it hurts me to go against, to expose this and to get to this point that who can, because a lot of people say, well, the way I seen it, the distinguished, a lot of people say, well, I knew your father. It took a long time in my life to understand what that means. Just because somebody didn't know my father, I initially thought they meant they was in a party. Now I've come to understand they could have been the police, they could have been some opportunists laying around, you know, say they could have been around, and to understand that not to deal with absolutes. A lot of people say, you know, when such and such was around in the 60s. I've understood now with my time being locked up, that just because somebody did 20 years, I've met people who did 20 years in prison who literally were preserved, mind, body, and soul, still in the same place they was in before then. I've understood that, so just because somebody was around movement, you know what I'm saying? It took a while for us to be able to distinguish in the Black Panther Party and a Black Panther. I've met people who it was a phase they went through in their lives. I've seen the concerted efforts of people who don't say to come around and say, this is your new Chairman Fred. Family members bought out to send us back in the time warp 30, 40 years back for all the lessons that we learned from Chairman Fred, the Black Panther Party, an organization that provided an example for us to fight in our own interests. And we stress in our own interests. And to see that, people try to twist the word, how the Rainbow Coalition, I've seen it attempted to be twisted around. I've seen how Malcolm's lessons, I've seen how Oprah Winfrey said on TV shows and say what Malcolm said by any means necessary, he meant by politically, educationally, or economically. Bullish. The man told you the ballot or the bullet. He made it very clear what he was about. So it's been how they brought family members. I've seen how Daley, the mayor of Chicago, Gangsta Daley, the president of Chicago, how he brought Dr. King's children, who his daddy Daley hated King Sr. How he annually brought King's children to Chicago with Reverend Flager. And they brought him up there to go up and mess over their daddy's legacy. And how long it took us to understand really why King was assassinated. I grew up too in those colonial schools about this whole abstract, I have a dream, and just some white man just shot him from, happened to be in a hotel room across the hall from with a rifle, and look out the window and say, there go Dr. King. It took a while to grasp that some of the forces that was involved in his assassination, how they benefited, and understanding how deep this counterinsurgency is. So the work that we've done, the cases that we've caught, the case that we continue to catch, the history that we're with right now, they have served the purpose to reignite and to set history in check. Because like one guy, one of my forces told me when I was locked up, he said, Chairman, man, he said, man, when we get the revolution, man, can't wait, man, we're going to be straight, going to chill, it's going to be good. I said, oh, brother, hold on, don't jive yourself. I recall when I was locked up, I finally got into my running, I got in shape, and I thought I was cool, and I started lacking. And then the guy told me, he said, Chairman, this ongoing. This ain't just, I said, no, man, I ran 5 miles a day, I'm straight now. I can start going back, eating my sweets and everything. He said, no, Chairman, this is an ongoing process. This ministry we've been doing related to revolution. Revolution is not an incident. It's an ongoing process, because we must understand, as what Chairman Mao stated, that the reactionaries will attempt to rear their ugly heads continuously. We can't just get to a certain point and say, okay, man, that was power. You had a climb in the 60s where you can walk down the street 3-4 in the morning, throw power to the people. You don't see three-year-old children calling the police out. Pig, leave my community. People taking up out of the stores. I'm liberating. You had a conscious level. You seen James Brown. I'm black and I'm proud. Beautiful. But as soon as we seen that military defeat, we seen people like James Brown revert back to wearing red, white, and blue drawers on in Rocky movies on Living in America. So you know what I'm saying? They had a thing when I was locked up called max material. Max material meant some guys, whether they was the max or minimum, they were going to be who they were. They were never stool pigeon, never informed, none of that. Then you had some guys, according to the camp they were in, afford how they acted. You look at videos of these images of Bobby Rush, you're like, that same dude was in the Black Panther Party. You look at some of these people that was in the movie in the 60s. You'd be like, is that him? That was a movement then that created a climate that forced a lot of these cats to fake the funk. It took me a while to understand that.
You know, one thing I would add to that, you know, you were talking about history being distorted. And I think, you know, a lot of people, well, hopefully not a lot of people in this room, but a lot of people in general may think, well, of course they're going to distort the history of the Panthers because they were at one time, you know, the biggest threat to our national security, as according to J. Edgar Hoover. But Texas right now is a second home for me, so I'm there all the time, and I'm knee-deep into politics. And one of the things that you should know is that most of our school books all around the country come out of Texas. Right now, a big debate is going on, and they're winning that debate in terms of what they're putting in the history books, not for high school, not for middle school, but for the younger people. So as we speak, we have people that are pulling out Cesar Chavez. And they're looking at his background and saying, oh, he was a communist, and he did this, and he did that, and they're trying to pull him out. Thurgood Marshall, pulling him out. And it's being replaced with people like Phyllis Schlafly, the Moral Majority, Jerry Falwell. It's being replaced with Newt Gingrich. And so I think I'm just kind of dovetailing because it might have just, you know, I mean, when you talk about Panthers and all that, we don't see that imagery anymore, so it's so far removed, and it's like, it really is 40 years ago, and many people in this room weren't even born. But when you're seeing today that little boy that was just up here, if he goes to public school, may be reading about Newt Gingrich and his contract to America in 1992, when the Republicans took over both houses, you know, the Senate and Congress, after Bill Clinton. And Cesar Chavez, you might have to go to after school program to find out about that. That's where it's at. And I think our enemies have discovered that maybe we can't really get this spirit when they're 20 and 15 and 16 and whatever. We'll get them when they're 6. Get them when they're 7. Get them when they're 8. And start to build a whole generation. And this comes to my other question, that from my experience, people have these 10 and 12 year plans. Being in Texas, I found out that they was planning for 20 years to put George Bush Jr. into the White House. You know, not five, not a, you know, it's like, we have a plan for you and we're going to execute it. And here's all the different pieces. As the PLCC, what are your plans? And, you know, what are some of the long range goals that you can share with us that at least people in this room, when they start to see them come to fruition, they can latch on and really start to build with that?
3 nights ago, we did a panel along with Elvis Big Man Howard, who was a member of the Black Panther Party. He said one of the Panther quotes were, information was raw material for new ideas. And we are fighting to grab, right now for the democratic space to even engage and struggle. To take this, I don't want to say glass ceiling, but this concrete ceiling up of us, and you'll be surprised what type of ideas come out. For all practical purposes, the Black Panther Party in Chicago existed 18 months. And you've seen the innovative ideas. You've seen forces like Ronald Doc Satchel, who's the Deputy Minister of Health, walk up off the college campus, first year student tomorrow, and ideas were popping where they were bringing the ambulances in, donated to the Black Panther Party, and we're implementing the first free medical centers, and so once we bust this fear factor, so we can have an actual discussion, you know what I'm saying, we say you'll be surprised at the type of ideas and that people can engage in or win, and we say what Lenin said, that what takes people 20 years to learn in ordinary times, they can learn in 2 years in revolutionary times. It's a stoppage, of us to talk about too much long range. We bogged down with the case of our minister information December 7th. We're facing some serious time. I got locked up three days ago. Constant bogged down, but we do struggle. And it's important, to have, long range idea. And we talking about some institutions we are putting in place, some of the programs with the food programs, up and annie with them. We already have some programs in place, but we see ourselves tweaking them, and we see ourselves being able to, now that we get some clarity now of who the POCC is, the work that we do, that we're not a 501c3 group, now we can have some discussions that we see, and people, sometimes people are looking at, man, these cases y'all have caught and the seriousness of it, and y'all, a lot of people have went to the wayside, a lot of people was, we call false flag, a lot of bogus groups. So now we see people, the importance of getting some resources to us. We hope, and I might be being idealistic, but to move forward with implementing a lot of these programs we got, you know, that we have ideas that we couldn't do previously because of such things as lack of resources. So that's what we see down the road, just, and not just resource for resource sake, but resources to help us, you know what I'm saying, utilize this fuel. I would say, like I said, fuel for the fight, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of our work has been stunning because of lack of resources. I'm talking about, you know, just bonding people out and stuff like that. But I think we're in a bad but good stage in the game, because once we start getting acknowledged as the particular entity we are, it can help advance the world. Like I say, in the 60s, it was an era where James Brown could never tour the Black Panther Party. Well, I talked to Jesse Jackson, I talked to somebody else, I'm cool. It was a distinguishment. And we understand, we say there should be different forces. I'm not saying everybody should be a revolutionary, but we had this whole thing and we all the same. I'm not up with that. I'm a stickler for structure. I mean, I'm in this information. I mean, he has a work ethic. He has he may be skilled in certain things I'm not skilled in. And we acknowledge that. And so same with our Minister of Defense or somebody rank and file. And I respect it. And I try to, you know, use it, because our thing is we plan to win. So what if I get, you know, my best legal act, you know, a person, my best medical person, so we want to be able to cultivate that and fight for the space for that, you know what I'm saying, democratic space we can be able to have that type of serious conversation.
You talked about paying the price, and I'll give you three names, and maybe you could talk about the extent of how that price is and how you're able to go on day to day, and maybe we can draw from that how one is able to still continue a struggle when you have what I would consider for myself glaring distractions. We have obviously the case with Minister of Information, JR, who's definitely been a target from OPD. You know, and many of us take for granted when he gets on the radio and start putting them on blast and saying the things that they say. But when, you know, y'all leave this room and they're waiting there, you know, with trumped up charges, literally, you know, that's a serious thing. You know, you're talking about somebody who may have his life taken, and definitely his freedom, at the very least, is what they're gunning for. So that is one serious case that we're looking at, is what is going on with JR. Aaron Patterson, if you could talk about his principle of coming out of jail, getting all that money, putting it to revolutionary causes, and then being back in. How are you dealing with that day to day? And then, of course, you know, Momia, what is happening with him? Now, you know, the urgency of, you know, all hands on deck to make sure that Momia's case, that he's not put to the death chamber, and knowing that they got a black man in Philadelphia now running for district attorney who's running on a campaign of putting him to death if he gets elected, you know. So you got these types of things going on right now, and that's just political prisoner cases. There's dozens of others, you know, Chip Fitzgerald, this one and that one. You know, we could go to any state and find significance there. We have ongoing police brutality. In Los Angeles alone, there's been 19 people shot and killed in Southern California by police. And that's just one part of the country. You know, so these things are going on. And I guess, how do you manage to keep this? Because I think, you know, a lot of them, man, me, I just want to toss in the towel and, you know, play PlayStation, call it a day. It seems to be overwhelming. How are you able to keep that spirit going? And how are you all able to function and not have these bog you down?
We say we are servants of the people, and we are also servants of history. And basically, one of our matches with the POCC is that we work for the people. Our work hours are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That concrete out there, that's our desk. And who we work for, sometimes we get very disappointed. Like, we get upset, we get drained, or we say this is a war, so we do go through battle fatigue. However, the people are something else. I mean, they were at your lowest of low. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's some victory or something that the people would do, you know what I'm saying, to get you back on track. Also, we add to the fact that this all we got. This is not, you know, no option to say, okay, man, well, I mean, one time my brother told me, he said, Chairman, I don't think our people are ready for revolution. I said, well, let me be clear with you. This is not like no option, like Mike Tyson said, would you like to, you know, go in the boxing ring with me, though? We have no other choice but the struggle. And what the politics does for me, what the politics does for us, it gives us an ability to transcend past gender, geographical, and generational lines. To be able to look at situations like Oscar Lopez Rivera, to be able to look at situations like Toussaint Louverture, Reverend Nat Turner. Look at conditions that people have and continue to go through, to draw the connections and understand this is not no personal thing, just, you know, saying with you, because that's a lot of times you're like, well, man, the police don't like me, I'm going through it. Somebody asked me before, like, man, you think we just, cursed as a people, you know, sometimes, I mean, like, damn, all this bad luck we go through, whatever, you know, are we doomed, or is it something we doing wrong, whatever. But however, when you have a correct historical analysis and understand what I'm saying, and to be able to lay out that it's something, you know, that this is nothing new. This has been going on for quite some time. And some of the tactics, you know, have been tweaked, but it's been going on for quite some time. And to be able to put yourself in the correct context, why even with these cases, we try to expose all contradictions. Prior to Minister Information, JR's trial date being set for December 7th, they initially set up for December 4th. They set a date for December 4th. Aaron Patterson, they try to set this sentencing date for December 4th, and it fell on a weekend. So these, sometimes the state, they let us know, look, if y'all forgot, we ain't forgot. So people ask me, what kept me strong when I was locked up? The testimonies and the stories of the Mumia Abu Jamals and, you know, Sadiati Coles and so many others, you know what I'm saying? Just even knowing about the cases, you know, Chip Fitzgerald, I've only been locked up, so on and so forth. Leonard Peltier and so many other forces. And also, aside from the support of the people, I got to give credit also to the state. They remind me, they remind us that, man, we gonna try to crush you anyway. Malcolm said, you can lay down, let them walk all over you and say, master, am I cool? Am I all right? They'll say, no, nigga, turn over. This is a system that we look at many cases of people who have sold their soul and gave everything to the system. How they get through it. Look what's going on in electoral politics throughout the country. It's rumor they talking about indicting Nagin of the New Orleans. The Detroit mayor, you know, people who did the whole thing 9 to 5, you know, do they can. And it's system they get through with you. It's a wrap. So I want to be on the right side of history. You know what I'm saying? And also, I'm on Chairman Fred's tombstone. He said if he'd have been free, he don't know what he would have spent his life doing. I didn't get hooked on this, you know, it's like second nature, you know what I'm saying? You know, I get concerned and scared if the police don't pull me over, you know what I'm saying? I know it's not just no personal thing with me, it may come at a different degree, but it's going out for people all over, and ain't nothing like the high of a serving the people. I tell people, we may not have no resources, but you can drop us to POCC anywhere in the world. I can tell you testimonies that bring tears to your eyes about Salvador, Brazil. No English spoken at all. But the love and respect that they have for the price of the such forces as Chairman Fred, Field Marshal George, as I say, the people have not forgotten. That's why we fight so hard to maintain that legacy. Because them cats put in work. Not just on no jackets and no hats and talk cool. They put in work to get that type of respect. Yes, I was in isolation with steel doors behind me. People sniffing food to me. You know what I'm saying? That little Chairman Fred. So that's what keeps me alive. The support of the people and also the state. They continuous attack. The harder they hit back, the harder they hit, they remind me. Look, man, you ain't free. I'm going to remind them. I'm going to get there.